You are listening to Absent Minded, brought to you by HabsEyesOnThePrize.com. Hello and welcome to Absent Minded. My name is Jared Book, and we are continuing our look at teams in the Atlantic Division, and we're going with today the Boston Bruins. Don't worry, don't turn this off yet. It's gonna be a good one. Joining me today from Stanley Cup of Chowder is Jake Reiser. Jake, how are you doing?
I'm doing good, man. Just excited for the season.
Yeah, and it's an interesting one. I think the Bruins might be the most interesting team in this division because you have the teams that are up and coming, the Detroits, the Ottawas, the Buffaloes, and then you have the teams that are, you know, basically running back the same team they did a year ago, the Floridas, the Tampas, the Torontos, and then you have Boston, who is coming off a great season, had some big losses, and you can't replace Patrice Bergeron, and you can't really replace David Krejci, but you can at least try, I think. What's the attitude in Boston, I guess, going into the season without those two specifically, and do the fans, media, what's the kind of attitude with what has been done this offseason?
You know, obviously it's a little somber to lose not just one, but two of your franchise icons in the same offseason. Krejci maybe to be expected a little more due to age, the fact that he had left once before. Bergeron, we didn't know whether he was going to take the Zdeno Chara treatment, the you have a one-year contract every year you feel like you keep playing. But I give kudos to Bergeron for listening to his body, not overextending himself. That, to me, is the definition of a true teammate, is saying, hey, my body can't handle it. As much as I would love to be with you guys, I would rather you be stronger with someone who can handle an 82-game season, plus hypothetically a playoff run of some sort. So I give him kudos, as very sad as it is. And it certainly leaves a lot of questions to be answered that Bruins fans have been dying for answers for the last two or three years, because we knew this was coming up at some point. So, you know, it makes me really concerned to see what Don Sweeney and Cam Neely are doing. There are some positives here and there to what we've seen during the preseason, during the offseason, but there are still a lot of question marks, especially with those top six centers.
Yeah, and the Bruins strike me just as a really interesting kind of roster construction. You know, going into the year, they have 8 unrestricted free agents that are like still in camp on the roster, and some of those players are, you know, Milan Lucic, Jamie Benrys, like not kind of, you know, important players necessarily, but then you have, you know, a guy like Matt Grzelcyk, a guy like Jake DeBrusque, and there's a lot of wiggle room after this season in terms of if things don't go the way that they're necessarily expecting them to, or go worse than expected, that there is some wiggle room to really rebuild. They're losing about $20 million off the cap. The cap is expected to go up. Is the kind of feeling that this is kind of maybe a transition year, that maybe we'll see what we have and then kind of reload next year? Like, how is that the cap situation being looked at, and does that play into the expectations at all for this season?
Oh, I think the cap obviously has a big role to play here. One of the biggest reasons the Bruins were able to sign Patrice Bergeron and David Krejci last offseason is they used performance incentive bonuses that pushed into the salary cap this year. So I think it's somewhere between $3.5 to $4 million of cap overages. And then we also have about, it's insignificant this year. It's about $333,000 this year, but it's $1.3 million next year for the buyout of Mike Riley. So, you know, there's definitely a little bit of a strain on the cap, about some dead money, but you're right, to lose Matt Grzelcyk, Derek Forbert, Zboril, Shattenkirk, Lucic, Van Riemsdyk, Boqvist, Greer, DeBrusque, you know, there certainly is a lot of flexibility as to what the Bruins could be today and the same day next year. The roster could look completely different. You know, my understanding is, I think a guy like Jake DeBrusque has finally bought into the system. He's loved working with Coach Montgomery. You could see from the resurgence he had last year, so I would expect him to be kept. Matt Grizzlick is someone I would heavily keep my eyes on for trade rumors this season. One of the biggest, I wouldn't call surprises, but biggest net benefits of the preseason so far has been watching a guy like Mason Lowry, who they drafted out of Ohio State University, step up and really develop. He's got that two-way defensive game, so he can step up. He scored a beautiful goal in the preseason game against Washington a couple of days ago. He actually used to be a forward, but he's also got 3 inches and 30 pounds on Grizzlick. So does that make Grizzlick expendable in order to maybe facilitate a trade for someone like Elias Lindholm or Mark Scheifele or another center who might get you another couple of years and let you continue to work around the Marchand, Pasternak, McAvoy, Lindholm core? You know, there's a lot of interesting pieces, a lot of moving parts, but Grizzlick is someone I would definitely keep an eye on for this season.
And, you know, it's funny because I think there's a lot of parallels between the Bruins and the Panthers from a year ago, who ironically beat the Bruins in the first round this year, or last year, sorry. I'm still, my calendar is still off a little bit. I haven't thought about the hockey season as this season yet. But last year, after winning the President's Trophy, going out early in the playoffs, the Panthers made some major changes. They changed the coach. They made basically changed the core of their team, trading Huberto and Uyghur for Matthew Tkachuk. And the Bruins, you know, they're running it back. Obviously, Montgomery had a great season last year. I'm not expecting them to change the coach just because of an early playoff exit. But is there pressure on Don Sweeney and Cam, maybe not Cam Neely, but on Don Sweeney and management in terms of, you know, not really doing anything major?
There's a lot of pressure on Don Sweeney to get things done. If I had to grade him last year, it's hard not to give him an A. You look at the roster you had the Selke winner again in Patrice Bergeron. Your core was doing great, both young and old. You swung for the fences at exactly the right time to get Dmitry Orlov, Garnet Hathaway, Tyler Bertuzzi. Everything was pointing towards all the moves were the right things to do. And it just didn't work out. And so now it leaves you, okay, you've mortgaged a lot of our future. The Bruins don't have a first-round draft pick until 2025 now. And that's even a conditional pick. So it's really hard because you need those first-round picks in order to rebuild your future. Right now, Lowry, Fabian Lysell, and I'll talk about Matty Poitras in a little bit, but those are the only real guys to look at in the system that are like, okay, these guys have definitive futures in the big league club. Otherwise, the minor league system, as much as the P Bruins perform really well, it's not like there's a lot of blue chip prospects. Like you look at Arizona and you look at them with Logan Cooley, just the pieces that they have, or other teams that just have blue chip prospects that are ready to go who have been developing, waiting in the wings. The Bruins don't have that. And so there's a lot of pressure on both Sweeney and the major league roster to get things done. And it's hard because Sweeney's made all the right moves in the right time of that context. Like the Pastrnak extension that kicks in this year, it's 11.25 on the cap. You needed to do that. Marchand is still 2 years at 6.125. The Coyle extension, while it's not looking great, is still at 5.25. Zacha is at 4.75. McAvoy is at 9.5. Hampus Lindholm is at 6.5. Carlo is at 4.1. Linus Ullmark has 2 years left at 5. You need room to sign Jeremy Swayman next year. So there's a lot of pressure on Don Sweeney to figure this out, because obviously you want to keep Jeremy Swayman as your goaltender of the future. You need to figure out your center situation. You need to figure out your depth defenseman situation, because you only have McAvoy, Lindholm, and Carlo on the books after the season ends. And you need to figure out the rest of your forward depth, because as you only have Marchand for a certain amount of years, he's going to be the last guy of that older core that's going to retire. Yeah, it's fun to have Milan Lucic for a year, but Lucic left for a while. Marchand is the last one to come to have been a Bruin, stayed a Bruin, and be a part of that expansive core with Bergeron and Zdeno Chara of that leadership group. So you're going to have to figure out a way to replace him. There's a lot of moving parts in this season, regardless of when the trade deadline happens or not, is critical for the future of Don Sweeney's tenure.
Yeah, it's kind of interesting because you kind of think about the Bruins as, you know, perennial contenders. But since the 13 Stanley Cup final, they lost in the second round, missed the playoffs twice, lost in the first round, lost in the second round. They made the final against St. Louis in 19, then lost second round, lost second round, lost first round, lost first round. And at a certain point, to your point, you know, eventually you have to show results. And you know, their earliest pick this year is a fourth round pick, in 2023 as it stands. Obviously that can change a bit with, you know, a lot of the UFAs that they have, but, there's not many that are going to command early picks and, you know, for the Bruins, they're hoping that they're going to maybe be in a position to not sell, obviously, either, because that'll pretty much, if they're in a position to sell, that kind of, you know, puts Sweeney on an even hotter seat, I think. You mentioned Swayman earlier. How much pressure is there on the goaltending duo of Allmark and Swayman? Obviously, they were outstanding last year, and maybe an even underrated part of, you know, reason why they were so successful. And we all know goaltending is voodoo and is wildly inconsistent, except for, you know, Andrei Vasilevskiy, basically. How much pressure is on that goaltending duo, and how much of the season will rely on them, because of, you know, obviously Bergeron is a big loss defensively. So how much pressure is there on that duo, both, you know, internally and also on a wider scale as well?
You know, I think a lot of the pressure comes from us externally. I think if we talked to the two of them, they would say, there's no pressure. We just go out and do our jobs. We love each other. We're here to support each other. To me, it's the best bromance in the NHL right now. To me, I think they think there's no pressure. Externally, obviously, there's pressure on them. Losing Bergeron as one of the best defensive forwards in the NHL is certainly going to hurt. I do like what the Bruins got in Morgan Geeky to try and replace a little bit of it. And at the very least, it helps you still have Grizz like McAvoy, Lindholm, Carlo in front of him. Forbert, we'll see. Shattenkirk, we'll see. You know, that third unit might rotate in and out. We'll see Zboril come in. Maybe Lowry ends up on the major league roster. But, you know, the goalies certainly have some pressure on them. Allmark has been floated on and off as a trade candidate. So if he ends up maybe being a part of the trade package, we saw Brandon Bussey for the Bruins in the preseason do a really great job. So you wonder again, maybe Linus Allmark is the piece who's expendable if he performs well. I don't think that's going to be the case for Swayman. I think for Swayman, it's just continue to develop. He was great in this 1A-1B scenario last year. And the hope for him is that the role becomes switched, that Swayman is the 1A and Allmark is the 1B, whereas last year it was the opposite, and for good reason when you have the Vezina winner on your roster. But, you know, that's just healthy competition and fun. So externally, there's definitely pressure on the two of them. Internally, I don't think they care too much, but that's more so a product of their personalities and who they are.
Yeah, it's going to be really interesting. You mentioned Lucic before as well. You know, obviously he was a big part of those successful Bruin teams. He was part of that core, with Chara and Bergeron and Marchand, like you mentioned. What is kind of the expectation? Obviously he was never the player he was in Boston when he left. Obviously the expectations are not that he's going to be the player he was with Boston now either. Is it kind of just like a fun nostalgic veteran to bring in? Like, are there any expectations on him, or is it just people, you know, getting those 17 jerseys back out and wearing them again?
I mean, obviously there's some expectations. He's going to be a fourth liner, and I don't think anybody's going to doubt that. But I'll tell you a little thing. When he signed, July 1st, free agency open, Don Sweeney called him. He said, I ran right out. I'm in Vancouver right now. I ran everywhere I could to find a Bruins hat. I'm so happy to be a part of the black and gold family again. And that's the role that he's going to play. And it's funny because it was the role played last year by the guy who also wore 17 and Nick Foligno. It's that locker room glue, the person who you don't just want to hear it from the top. You don't just want to hear it from the Marchands and the Pasternaks and the McAvoys. That leadership group with the numbers on the fronts of their sweaters. You want to hear it from the guys in the back end. And that's Milan Lucic, who's going to demonstrate every day, I want to be a Boston Bruin. And this is what it means to be a Boston Bruin, to commit to it every day. That's the role that they're expecting Lucic to play. And so far, he's playing it pretty perfectly.
Yeah, it's, you know, obviously there's a lot of, not incidents, but a lot of history between him and the Canadians as well in those playoff matchups. And when that a lot of Canadians fans, I think, look back on fondly now that they're right smack in the middle of a rebuild, and any playoff series would be a lot of fun, I think. When you look at their roster, obviously, you know, there's that hole, there's the two holes at center, and somebody needs to fill them. Who's kind of in the driver's seat to kind of step up and surprise people a little bit on this roster that maybe can, you know, you're not going to replace a Patrice Bergeron, but you can step up and be, you know, a top six player that on a playoff team. And I think that's really what they need. And who's kind of there that in that spot to start the season, and who do you think can surprise a little bit?
Yeah, absolutely. I'm going to quickly backtrack because you talked about the history with Lucic and the Canadians, and I always remember the 2014 handshake line with Dale Weiss and Alexi Emelin, where Lucic goes, I'm going to bleep and kill you guys next year. So certainly some history between him and the franchise. But to answer your question, it starts and ends with Pavel Zacha. It was a trade that I think people might have been a little bit confused about last year. They were happy to get rid of Erikola, who didn't perform to expectations. We didn't know what we were getting out of Zacha. It sounded like it was two guys who needed changes of scenery, and both succeeded. Pavel Zacha had a career year, but on the wing. So it's obviously going to be Pavel Zacha's role, if he's naturally a center, to step up, be that first line center. Right now, I think he's got Van Riemsdyk on his left and Pasternak on his right, and I think Van Riemsdyk and Marchand might flip around on that left side, so you could have two-thirds of that perfection line back together again. It's on Zacha to show that last year wasn't a fluke and that he can continue to build on it. Charlie Coyle is probably your de facto two center, and again, that's on him to show, hey, you know, 2019, I had a phenomenal year with you guys. I was clutch. We went all the way to the Stanley Cup Finals. And then my numbers started to drop a little bit. So it's definitely up to Charlie Coyle to show that, you know, he's up to task. The surprise that I think a lot of Bruins fans had during this preseason is prospect Matty Patra, who's only 19 and has really come. His game scores for each of these preseason games, I believe he's been in the top five for every single game. So the fact that he's come in as a 19-year-old, yeah, it's against preseason rosters, but even against when they traveled to Philly and you were playing a pretty solid opening night-ish roster there, he had the number one game score for the entire game for the Bruins. So to see him scoring the way he scored a beautiful goal against Washington a couple of days ago. You know, he's still 19, so he's still a little raw, still got some things to learn. One of the things I've loved to see, though, when he loses the puck, his hustle and determination to get back on it, that's a great skill to have in a center. I forget which Bruin was just talking about this recently, but they described Matty Patra's game almost a little bit like Mitch Marner's. Just he might have a smaller frame, but he's gritty, he's smart, he's got an incredible hockey IQ, he knows to go to the right places. But obviously, being 19, he's not qualified for the AHL yet. So he will probably earn that 9-game trial to see what he's like on the big league roster. And then they'll make the decision whether he has to go back to juniors or whether he'll stay up and burn that first year of his ELC. But Matty Patra, definitely keep an eye out for him in the first 9-10 games of the season, because that's the biggest you know, hype right now. Patra's been doing such a great job, whether he makes it, and that bumps a guy like Patrick Brandt or Morgan Geeky ostensibly to the fourth line center, or Geeky's third line and Patra's fourth line. It pushes out a guy like Patrick Brown. It pushes out another prospect who's also worked really hard and maybe deserves a slot in John Beecher. You know, there's a couple. Patra and Beecher are your two most interesting prospects to look at, who have, I think, surprised people for possibly a center position this coming season.
Yeah, leave it to the Bruins to have Patrice Bergeron retire and then have another 19-year-old from the second round step right in. Not that I'm saying that he's going to be Patrice Bergeron, but yeah, I'm sure if history repeats itself even slightly, the Bruins will be thrilled with that as well. When it comes to the Bruins this season, and we've already talked about the hot seat and things like that, what would be considered a successful season? Obviously, you know, they're coming off of a President's Trophy season, but a first round exit. Obviously, I don't think either one of those will be expected, or at least the President's Trophy won't be expected this year. What will be a successful season for the Bruins?
So I had a nice chat recently, actually, with someone in the front office of the Bruins organization, and it was good for me, both as, you know, a fan of the team and as someone who's been around the team for so long, to hear what their expectations are. And they're not unreasonable. They know, even if Bergeron and Krejci came back, you could never replicate the type of luck and the type of magic that the Bruins had last season. It's completely unrealistic. And I think that has to trickle down to the fan base as well. I think making the playoffs is a great goal to have in and of itself, just because with so much turnover, you don't know where, you know, everybody else is. And there's a lot of other teams who are knocking on the door. You talked about it a little bit earlier. The Detroits, who went all in and got a great guy in Alex DeBrincat. Yeah, maybe their goaltending still has a little bit of sussiness here, but their forward core and their D with Moritz Seider, that's something to be worried about. Buffalo, I think, is really ready to take that next step. Tage Thompson, Peyton Krebs, Devin Levi. I think Devin Levi is their goaltender of the future. As a college hockey guy at Boston University who watched Devin Levi absolutely bully teams, to the fact that I think that's the last piece that they've been missing, to have a strong forward core with a guy like Tage Thompson up front, to have defensemen with Rasmus Dahlin and Owen Power. I know they took Connor Clifton from the Bruins as well, and he'll provide a lot of grit down on that third line. But then to have Devin Levi, a guy who you know is going to give you day in and day out everything he can as a goaltender. And I'm missing people on the forward court too. Dylan Cousins, Casey Mittelstadt, JJ Paterka, Jack Quinn, Matty Savoie, Alex Tuck. I think Buffalo's primed to take that next step as well. So if you can just figure out a way to stay ahead of those guys, Toronto might win the division. Florida might win the division. Tampa's a team everybody's going to be watching in the first 2 months because of Andrei Vasilevskiy's surprise surgery that's going to keep him out until at least December. So if you can take advantage of those first 2 months and establish a lead against teams like that, that have some just as much worry going into the season, the bar is, if you're in the playoff bubble structure by Thanksgiving, you tend to have the best shots to make the playoffs if you're not qualified for a spot already. That's kind of where the Bruins' goal is. I don't know if they're looking all the way towards the end of the season yet. I think the best expectation is to look at Thanksgiving first, get those first 2 months out of the way, see where you are, and then you can reevaluate for the future. And that's where I think you'll see, you know, if they're in the hunt and they're ready to go, that's where you might see kind of a one-off blockbuster trade, something might happen. If they're not contending, you'll step back, they'll reevaluate, maybe they sell. But, you know, I think they need to get to that Thanksgiving in America, that metric, and see where they go from there.
Yeah, Thanksgiving in Canada is not really a decision point, because every team will be tied for first place as it's Monday. it's before the season even starts this year, on October 9th. So, yeah, if you're in a playoff picture on Canadian Thanksgiving, yeah, I have bad news. It's not going to really work out for you. So thank you so much for taking the time. It's definitely going to be interesting. I think that the Bruins might be the most interesting team, like I said before, in the division, just because you kind of know what to expect with the top three teams in Toronto, Tampa, and Florida. You kind of expect some improvement from the Ottawas, the Buffaloes, the Detroits, maybe even Montreal, but not to that extent. And then you have Boston kind of in the middle, who's kind of trying to keep up with the top teams and kind of trying to hold back the teams behind them. Because I think a lot of those teams see Boston as the, and maybe even Tampa, with a slow start, as well. So it'll definitely be interesting. Jake, thank you so much for taking the time, and I hope you enjoy the season.
Absolutely. I want to mention one
Yeah.
quick comment. You know that during the preseason media tours that they ask a lot of questions to a lot of different players. The one player who said the Bruins are the team he's most intrigued to see in the season was Matt Tkachuk after knocking them out. So it's not just you guys. I think it's a lot of people have their eyes on this Bruins team. I have my eyes on the Canadians too. Where, well, how do they take a next step forward? But you know, between every team in the Atlantic, the always ongoing carousel, I think we're gonna have a lot of fun this year.
I think Montreal is still maybe a year or two behind the Buffaloes, the Ottawas, the Detroit, which makes sense because that's where they are in the rebuild as well. But yeah, I think that there's going to be a definite step up. I think a lot of people are just, putting them in last, and maybe that's the case. But I every what I've learned is that conventional wisdom never really ends up working out. And it's definitely going to be a lot of fun. I think that. Montreal's in the position to kind of just sit back and enjoy it because there's not really much pressure on them, as there is Detroit. I think, the other teams are going to be, six teams or seven teams of the division are going to be are expecting to make the playoffs this year, and I think that there's obviously going to be some disappointed ones because they can't all make it, and it's going to be definitely a season to watch. Thank you so much, and enjoy it.
Absolutely, you guys as well.